So we, you know, we'll have to prepare for the next one. That, you know, I'd say is will get attention this time. Mm-hmm. That, you know, I'd say is will get attention this time.
Mm-hmm. Today, the greatest risk of global catastrophe doesn't look like this. Instead, it looks like this. If anything kills over 10 million people in the next few decades, it's most likely to be a highly infectious virus rather than a war. Not missiles, but microbes. First, we've got population. The world today has 6.8 billion people. That's headed up to about 9 billion. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%. You know, is there something to worry about with medicines? That is, might some of them have side effects? Do we need safety testing? I mean, and we're taking things that are, you know, genetically modified organisms, and we're injecting them in little kids' arms. We just shoot them right into the vein. Making the mRNA is really easy and really cheap, and that's the magic of this thing. But there's no doubt in the next 5 years, we can, you know, we just need to mess around. There's a lot of lipid nanoparticles, and some are very self-assembling. There's no inherent reason it's not thermal stable, it's not cheap. And some are very self-assembly, and some are very self-assembly, and some are very self-assembly. But you don't have a choice. People act like you have a choice. For the world at large, normalcy only returns when we've largely vaccinated the entire global population. We should have free speech, but if you're inciting violence, if you're causing people not to take vaccines, you know, where are those boundaries that even the U.S., should, you know, have rules? And then if you have rules, you know, what is it? Is there some AI that encodes those rules? Because you have billions of activity, and, you know, if you catch it a day later, the harm is done. Well, of course, if you want to wait and see if a side effect shows up 2 years later, that takes 2 years. So whenever you're acting quickly, like during the HIV crisis, they created a quick way of getting drug approval. There is a trade-off there. In that case, it worked super, super well. And here, you know, we will, I think, be able to get some safety indications, but this is a public good. And so, you know, those trade-offs, the governments working on a cooperative basis will be involved in the decision to say, hey, the regulator says go ahead, even though you haven't taken the normal time period. In this year's annual letter, Melinda and I take the toughest questions we get asked and give our answers. One that's come up for a long time is, as we make the world healthier, is the population going to get so big that feeding everybody and maintaining the environment is going to be impossible? Here we can see a chart that looks at the total world population over the last several hundred years. And at first glance, this is a bit scary. We go from less than a billion in 1800, and then 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7.4 billion, where we are today, is happening even faster. So Melinda and I wondered whether providing new medicines and keeping children alive, would that create more of a population problem? What we found out is that as health improves, families choose to have less children. And this effect is very, very dramatic. We find that in every country of the world, this is repeated. The population growth goes down as we improve health. So we've taken that chart that shows the global population growth, and we've actually extended it out all the way to 2100. And we can see that instead of continuing, it actually flattens out. Another way to see that is through this rate of population growth. And you can see that in the 60s, that reached a pretty high number, over 2% per year. And it's now come way, way down.
Now, 11 billion people, still a lot, but the good news is that the faster we improve health, the faster family size goes down. And so we can feel great about saving those lives.
The side effects for the Moderna vaccine sound concerning. We looked. After the second dose, at least 80% of participants experienced a systemic side effect, ranging from severe chills to fevers. So, are these vaccines safe?
Well, the FDA, not being pressured, will look hard at that. The FDA is the gold standard of regulators, and their current guidance on this, if they stick with that, is very, very appropriate. And you know, the side effects were not super severe. That is, it didn't cause permanent health problems for the things there. They, you know, Moderna did have to go with a fairly high dose, and so you know, to get the antibodies. Some of the other vaccines are going able to go with lower doses to get responses that are pretty high, including the J&J and the Pfizer. And so there's a lot of characteristics of these vaccines. It's great that we have multiple of them that are going out there. And yes, I think
you know the data better than I do. But the data showed that everybody with a high dose had a side effect.
Yeah, but some of that is not dramatic, where, you know, it's just, you know, super painful. But yes, there we need to make sure there's not severe side effects. The FDA, I think, will do a good job of that, despite the pressure. Here, we clearly need a vaccine that works in the upper age range, because they're most at risk of that. And doing that so that you amp it up so it works in older people and yet you don't have side effects. You know, if we have, you know, 1 in 10,000 side effects, that's, you know, way more, 700,000, you know, people who will suffer from that. So really understanding the safety at gigantic scale across all age ranges, you know, pregnant, male, female, undernourished, existing comorbidities, it's very, very hard. And that actual decision of, okay, let's go and give this vaccine to the entire world, governments will have to be involved, because there will be some risk and indemnification needed before that can be decided on.
You say that if we do everything right now in terms of testing and shutting the country down, that we should have only one wave of this virus. Why are you so confident? Because a lot of people aren't so sure that we're not going to have a recurrence when we get another flu season next fall.
Well, we don't know how seasonal this virus is. You know, it'd probably be good for the Northern Hemisphere if the force of infection goes down as we get into spring and summer, you know, and give us some time to get both the drugs and advance the vaccine. It is fair to say things won't go back to truly normal until we have a vaccine that we've gotten out to basically the entire world. And so, you know, the best people at the foundation who are all about high volume vaccines, you know, are working with many manufacturers, not only on the safety and efficacy, but getting that billions of dose capacity.
Is it basically mean that the vaccine is our only hope of getting back to normal?
Yeah, well, society should be able to have things like schooling that get a priority versus certain more entertainment related things. And I guess, you know, politicians will show what their value system is there. The only way we'll get completely back to normal is by having maybe not the first generation of vaccines, but eventually a vaccine that is super effective and that a lot of the people take, and that we get the disease eliminated on a global basis. That is where we can finally start taking all the problems that have been created in education and mental health and start to build back in a positive way.
My name is Dr. Mike Yeadon. I left Pfizer in 2011. What we were being told about this virus and what we needed to do in order to stay safe was simply not true. And I'm here today to tell you that there is something very, very bad happening. And if you don't pay attention, you will soon lose any chance to do anything about it. And don't say you weren't warned.